Hello, faithful listener, it's Darren here with an extra to this podcast extra for Good Friday. What you're about to hear was recorded on March the 5th. This was 5 weeks before Good Friday and just a few weeks before the coronavirus lockdown began in the UK. It feels like a very long time ago. In the podcast, we talk a bit about what we expect to do on Good Friday, and one thing's really obvious. We're expecting to be in church. We're expecting to be in a church building with other people. And that's now not going to happen. But one thing's for sure, we will be doing something on Good Friday, still thinking about the importance of vigil and community in whatever form it will now take. As we see at the end of the podcast, do get in touch and let us know your thoughts and feelings about Good Friday in our strange new context. Now more than ever, we'd love to hear from you. So here's the original podcast. Thanks for listening and stay safe. Well, hello, faithful listener, and welcome to the third of our special Small Voice podcasts for the season of Lent. My name is Darren, and I'm joined in the studio, as ever, by Anne.
Hello.
And Holly.
Hello.
Now, if you've been listening to the previous podcast, you'll know that in our first of the special podcasts, we talked about Lent generally, and in the second one, we talked about Ash Wednesday. This time round, we're going to discuss Good Friday, although we may allow ourselves to drift back in time to Maundy Thursday. As the Spirit leads. Now, as with last time, we tended to talk about our own experiences first before maybe talking about our plans for this season. So starting with Holly, what do you have to kind of, what do you recall of Good Friday generally?
So Good Friday has, I was going to say always, but that makes it sound like since I was a little kid. But I became a Christian when I was about 15. And then the whole time that I've been a Christian, I have gone to a Good Friday service. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean a 3-hour long service in the middle of the day on Good Friday. So yeah. That's been something that I've always done. When I was a teenager, we used to go to the Good Friday service. And I always remember it because... what I would think of as being an unusual thing now, we used to have communion on Good Friday, and which is a very Presbyterian interpretation of what you should do with Good Friday, but it was the only day of the year when we had proper wine for communion and we didn't have grape juice. So that was very exciting whenever you're 15. And I remember thinking it was terribly boring and terribly sad. And that afterwards we took my friend Andrew to the zoo because Andrew didn't like being sad, so we had to take him to the zoo to cheer him up. So we did 3 hours of sad church, and then we'd get in the car and take Andy to the zoo. And we would look at penguins and be happy again.
Okay, Anne?
Well, as you know, I grew up in a tradition that didn't even mark Holy Week at all in any way. So I guess if you'd asked me when I was a teenager, could you mark a 3-hour vigil on Good Friday, could you sit in silence and reflect for 3 hours? I would have thought it was impossible. Just not something that I could have coped with. But for the second half of my life, a Good Friday vigil has been at the heart of a Good Friday for me. And I now find myself at the opposite extreme in that it really upsets and disturbs me if there are too many words. In the last couple of years, I've found that people don't trust the process. They don't trust the vigil to be meaningful to the folk who are there unless they structure it and tell you what you should be thinking about. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that is just anathema to me now. That it's almost as if it's almost a kind of meditation. You find yourself, over the 3 hours, sinking deeper and deeper and deeper into that reflection on Christ's suffering on the cross. Mm-hmm. And anything that interrupts that somehow jolts you back to the present and to your actual physical surroundings in a way that gets in the way of that. Now, I know that that's precious and stupid because the first Good Friday was anything but contemplative. You know, it was raucous and it was noisy and it was overwhelming. But I've got a bit precious about it now.
And for people who are maybe not Lenty experts, I mean, a kind of Good Friday vigil traditionally is from 12 noon until 3.
Yeah, the whole time that Jesus was on the cross.
Yeah, and I think, I believe some churches kind of have a sort of drop-in, not to kind of cheapen it or say it's like a drive-through thing, but to recognise that 3 hours is maybe a bit long for some people. So
yeah.
come
Yeah, absolutely. So the church that I go to on Good Friday is not my usual church.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly wouldn't be unusual in that service for people to come in for a bit and leave again. Certainly not unusual in Catholic churches that I've been to as well on Good Friday. It's not unusual to be there for part of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Is a Good Friday vigil something that is...
I think my first experience was not so much of the Good Friday, but we did say we'd dip into Monday, Thursday, so... I think I've mentioned before that I went to a church called Morningside Baptist Church in Edinburgh, and maybe unusual for some Baptist churches. It did have Easter week services. But on Monday, Thursday, I think as part of the... Each evening there was like a half-hour service. So we went along to this half-hour service. But there was also a communion or Eucharist at the local, I'm guessing, Episcopalian church. And Morningside Baptist Church used to be at this place called Holy Corner in Edinburgh, where there's kind of four churches. So this was a joint service, and that was my first experience of the kind of stripping of the altar.
Yeah.
As I recall, you have communion, and then basically the service ends in silence, and everything is stripped bare, you know, to represent Jesus being taken away, and you know, being deserted by his disciples. And I found that amazingly powerful. I mean, yeah, more so actually than any Good Friday service that I've been to, but I think that spurred in me a desire to go to Good Friday services. I'm a bit like you, Anne, in that I want to have space, although I have been at churches where I think a lot of work has gone into there being lots of different corners of the church where you can go and do things. But even that, it's like, you know, I don't think that kind of the equivalent of a Chinese banquet is what I want. You know, it's... And what I'm actually coming up to say is, you know, look, it's a service of deep, deep misery. So as a Scot, I absolutely love it. You know, never happier than when I'm thoroughly miserable. But I would say for me, the Monday, Thursday one was the one that really hit me between the eyes. Because, you know, you leave the church in silence. You know, Jesus has been abandoned, he's been betrayed.
And
that was you.
Yeah,
I really... That really resonates with me. I think one of the... I can remember very few church services from when I was a teenager. But the ones that I remember are a Monday, Thursday service that was in the style of a tenebrae service, where there were candles lit, and during the service the candles were extinguished one by one until we left the service in silence and in darkness. Which really deeply resonated with me. And it was also the first time that I'd ever come across anything like that in church growing up as a Presbyterian. It was just, it was a bit odd. It was a bit mystical. It was a little bit different than what I was used to. And it really stuck with me. And the other services I remember are Good Friday services. I remember one of the ministers who used to lead our church, David Montgomery, wrote new words to the Irish song "The Fields of Athenry" to be about Good Friday. That started out outside a city wall. I heard a young man calling. If you're familiar with the song, so again, really unusual for an Irish Presbyterian church to be to be singing a song to the Fields of Athenry on Good Friday. But it was a time that my church felt that they could be contemplative and creative in a way that they were not necessarily on all the other days of the year. And it really, I think that's why those services are part, like they feel like they're deep in my bones.
Yeah.
But you know, the worship leaders need to hold their nerve to do that kind of thing though, because I've been in Monday, Thursday and Good Friday services where they lost their nerve at the last minute. And so we sang an Easter hymn to reassure us all just before we left that everything's going to be okay, chaps. And that just completely defeats the purpose. You know, you're reading back into history what these people who were the followers of Jesus then did not know. And if we're not allowed to feel that, or at least get a hint of that once a year, then why are we marking it? What are we doing? You know, just stick with Easter in that case.
Yeah.
But of course, we don't live Easter. We live Holy Week right through to Easter Day in our own lives.
Yeah. Can I ask, I mean, why get together for that service then? Just out of interest on Good Friday, if it's so important to be contemplative, and it almost sounds like, you know what, I want to be alone.
That's interesting, because I definitely do not want to be alone. It is maybe a bit like Jesus' disciples clinging together for comfort. It feels like something that has to be done in community. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was thinking about vigils of the past. You know, you go into church and, as you say, Holly, people can come and go. And so it's not as if a service starts and a service ends. And people are not necessarily sitting right beside you. But there's a sense of people all around you in ones and twos and threes all across the church. And that's enough of a community to be part of in that moment. But it's not something I would ever want to do alone.
For me, I don't know if this makes sense, but there's almost a holy awkwardness about it. Mm. There's something about, on Maundy Thursday, abandoning Jesus, or mm-hmm. and telling the story of the disciples abandoning Jesus, and you run away and you go home, and but the next day you're drawn back again, and you okay. have to watch this yeah. this person that you loved and you followed die. And it almost, for me, it sort of plays out this sort of, like a sort of play in my head of me scurrying away yeah. and then me coming back and not even really talking to anyone else, just all feeling a little bit like we're all in the wrong here a bit yeah. and then, but being together. Mm-hmm. Weirdly enough, it is the one day of the year that I get it in the diary at work to take off mm-hmm. before any other day. I would happily work any other day, but mm-hmm. not Good Friday. And I struggle to completely understand why that is.
Yeah.
But there's something about that yeah. communal vigil mm-hmm. and communal silence that okay. means a lot to me.
And any particular plans this time around?
Well, you know me. I've got a picture ready. yeah. It is partly to do with the fact that I find words just won't do mm-hmm. at this point. And I thought about what would be the sort of picture that I could contemplate or offer to you for contemplation as well. And I thought at first about some of the images by the Scottish artist Peter Howson, who has drawn and painted the crucifixion over and over and over again. And he's someone who's experienced great pain and suffering in his own life, and so he knows how to do that. But in the end, I've gone for something much simpler. And this is the image that
so this is being shown
I want
live
to share with
to
you.
Us, and we will... Oh, okay.
It's an image that I've known for years because it's part of a set of paintings by a Catholic artist called Sigur, I think it's Koder, there's an umlaut over the R, K-O-D-E-R.
Koder, yeah.
And he was a priest and an artist who I think is quite famous really in the Catholic Church for his presentation of scenes from the Gospels. But this is from a series called The Folly of God, and we had these as posters in our church for many years, and it shows the foot of the cross and two people holding on to the foot of the cross. We can't see their faces are behind the cross, but their hands are clasped and they're comforting one another, and they are clearly people who loved Jesus. Mm. And all they can do is hold on. Mm-hmm. And this painting's actually called No Words.
I'm conscious that we can't say no words. We can't have too long a silence on the podcast, but we will, thanks to our amazing team of people behind the scenes, this will in time appear on our website. Any thoughts on that, Holly, or anything that you would want to talk about what you might do over...
I was listening to what we said in our first Lent podcast, mm-hmm. and one of the things that I said was I didn't think my faith needed any more words. So it's interesting to look at this painting. I think in my desire to get everything right as a young Christian, I wanted to feel like I needed to understand atonement theology. I needed to know what was going on. I needed to know what I was meant to believe. Mm. And the longer I sit in silence and the longer I sit in vigil, the more I see the services on Good Friday to be more analogous to what I see at my work, which is in the hospice, mm-hmm. which is people sitting at the bedside of someone that they love who is dying. And we, it's the ultimate in incarnation to die. Mm-hmm. And that we sit at the foot of the cross and wait and watch. And I don't really have any more words for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am sure I don't have much wisdom to offer either. I have an interesting challenge, and I confess it's one that we often find, wife and I, in that being a teacher, I tend to be away, oftentimes visiting family or something over Easter. And I'm not sure you get the same sense of communion, if you like, if it's not your own church that you're at. One thing that I do find, if I don't know, solace sounds too blasé a word, but you know, to me, music is really, really important on Good Friday in particular. I'm drawn obviously to, you know, your passions of Johann Sebastian Bach and things like that, or the music of Arvo Pärt, or actually increasingly a lot of the Russian Orthodox church music is phenomenally powerful and very moving. But at the end of the day, I'm just trying to put in some words, and I think Anne has kind of played a blinder here and left us with a very, very powerful image. And basically, as with the previous podcast, we'll say, faithful listeners, if you want to tell us what you plan to do on Good Friday, or if you listen to this after Good Friday, you want to tell us what you did do, or join in discussions about the practice, then please do get in touch with us via our website, smallvoice.org.uk, or tweet us on Twitter at small_voice1. It has been really lovely already to see comments from people, and people sharing and appreciating the stuff that's going on here. It's a quiet contribution, but hey, we're Small Voice, so we wouldn't have it any other way. We will be back in due course with the final podcast, when we'll look obviously at Easter Sunday, and we'll maybe explore a bit more and the thing that you mentioned about, you know, which days we actually live through. But for just now, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.